All right, folks, this is the Nobody Likes Casey McClain podcast. You're getting it on the, I think 4 weeks into being unemployed, which is a blessing and a curse. You're going to catch me while I'm doing dishes, which I think sometimes happens. There's some positives and negatives of the timing of me getting unemployed, which I might have talked about already. One of them is, so we're about to have a kid. It's never good to lose your primary source of income when perhaps the most expensive year of your life is coming up. That's certainly a negative, but I will say, like, it has been nice to, oh my god, you know when you do dishes and you pull something out, I was in Montana all weekend, and my wife, so the reason this year is going to be so expensive is because my wife is right now like, Jesus, she's like almost 7 months pregnant, my god. Anyway, so the I just pulled a piece of Tupperware out and it had been put in the dishwasher in a way that made it pool a bunch of water inside of it. Anyway, I was in Montana all weekend, and my wife was at home, did some chores. So the positive, this is a rough start to the podcast. Listen, if you made it through the first rambling couple of minutes, it had to have felt like a marathon. The reason the timing is fortuitous in one way, and it's not just me trying to Mr. Brightside this, is that we have a lot of work to do, my wife and I, to get ready for this kid. And my wife, I don't know how much everyone in the world knows about pregnant women, but they're not exactly out running marathons, you know what I mean? I would say even relative to, well, I wouldn't even say that necessarily. So relative to having our first kid, our daughter that we have right now, I would say I'm definitely doing more stuff. It's like more burden on me. And that was true even before I lost my job. We have a pretty good understanding, my wife and I. My wife's a teacher. Many listeners will know that already. And we have a pretty good understanding that, like, when my wife is not working, when it's summer or whatever, she does more of, like, the home chores, and then we split them. And then right now, while she's all, she went and got herself knocked up. By the way, I love saying that. I love walking with my, like, around strangers saying that she got herself knocked up. It's very fun. So yeah, I'm doing just like a lot more stuff around the house anyway, and it's been I will admit it's been a little bit overwhelming. And then the reason it's been so much harder this time is because now we have not only all of our normal household chores, but we have a 3.5, almost 4-year-old child to take care of also. And for like weeks, my wife has been not even supposed to lift my daughter. I think she's done it a couple times to get her like in and out of the bath. But other than that, like every time my daughter needs to be lifted, I'm the one doing it. By the way, I'm so glad this is not a video podcast for you to see like how disorganized our kitchen can get. And how I feel like my wife and I have been moving in. So we first got an apartment together in like 2012, I think. So we've lived together now for nearly 11 years. We moved into an apartment. We like really moved into our first apartment, really moved in. And then 9 months later, we discovered a bunch of black mold in our apartment, and we moved like 5 floors down into another apartment in the same building. And we like never really quite felt moved in there, and then now we live in this house, and it doesn't really quite feel like we're all the way moved into this house. And I think that might just be another thing about having a kid too, is like, the other day I was going through shit in our garage, and I'm like, oh, there's a toy we like, somebody gave us that we like never even opened for our daughter. But so anyway, I got all this extra shit going on. in addition to trying to do comedy, and I did for 5 weeks. It's amazing to even imagine right now, but for 5 weeks I wasn't even doing comedy because of the laryngitis. But it's kind of interesting. Having laryngitis for 5 weeks was significantly worse for me, like mentally and emotionally, as it relates to not doing comedy, than the pandemic was. Because in the pandemic, you're like, well, everybody's paused, and so, you know, though I wish I was doing comedy, I'm not like losing ground. And you know, I guess, like, I think, like, the outlook I have on comedy that I feel like is somewhat mature is that every bit of this is a little bit of a lottery ticket, right? You're like, you never know what's gonna go. I have friends who've gotten big off of TikTok. I have friends who've gotten big off of Dry Bar specials. I've got friends who have gotten big on YouTube, and I've got friends who are tremendously talented who quit comedy because nothing ever happened and they became frustrated, or it was too much of a hedonic treadmill, which, by the way, is a phrase that I realized I overuse, but it is true. I think comedy is one of the best examples of a hedonic treadmill, because you just constantly are finding a new baseline of joy, and you have to like the stuff that goes along with it. And so I think this is why you might see, like, more of these. I think there's a thing that happens in comedy that I find very annoying. Just want to make sure that I'm not completely missing. I'll finish this thought, and then we'll go back to this thing I find annoying. It's a blessing because we have a lot of shit to do. And I probably would have never had time to do it, or if I had, I would have half-assed it. And if I had half-assed it, it would have been worse, and we'd still be kind of in this, like, catch-up mode, trying to move into our house with a new child on the way. For some reason, my wife, with both of these kids, wants their bedroom set up before they're born, with the full knowledge that, like, my daughter didn't sleep in her own bedroom until she was a year old. This new kid, I'd bet money we'd get out of our bedroom quicker. There's going to be a lot of stuff we're less cautious about with the new kid, but still, it's like 6 months, and so we're like, at minimum, we're like 7 months away from this kid sleeping in its own room, in her, it's a daughter, we are having a daughter, that's not like a, we didn't do like a gender reveal thing, we're having a second daughter. It'll be our last child. I don't know how people can afford to have three kids, mentally or financially. Anyway, so back to the thing in comedy that I find annoying, which is I really hate when, like, established. So there's, I guess I'll just say who the person is that kind of has made me. I don't even know that I've heard the person say this, so. But it's I heard a thing about Nate Bargatze, like, hates that crowd work clips are what everyone's doing now. And I guess it's just like a thing, it always comes off to me as like, it's like the old guy who hates hip-hop music because they don't play instruments or don't play instruments in the same way that you're used to. It's like it's... Listen, man, guy that's a millionaire, a multi-millionaire, the way that you got into comedy doesn't exist anymore. That like isn't a path anymore. Nobody's breaking through in comedy, especially, frankly, not like straight white dudes, unless you are like a darling, unless you're like no dude. Who does any edgy, no straight white dude who does any edgy brand of comedy is making it through on late night appearances and Netflix and whatever. Like, I think Nate Bargatze is a tremendously talented comedian, and that, I'm not trying to discount that. But, like, I'm not just gonna, like, I kind of had this realization in the pandemic, which is I do comedy for the audience, not for other comics. And though I'd like other comics' respect, like, I'm not like, if my choice is have a career or don't disappoint Nate Bargatze, who I'll probably never meet and who I don't know, I'm going to have a career, you know? Like, if it's something that I'm not ashamed of, there's comedy stuff that goes on that I'm like, oh, you should feel ashamed. Like, I will say I'm not so desperate to have, part of my credo, if you will, is that I'm going to do comedy that I like to do. I'm doing comedy because it's something I like to do. I'm pretty good at making money doing shit I don't like to do. And I'm not going to make comedy one of those things. It's not like the things that I like about comedy are not the, like, the fact that I can put comedy on a tax form. It's that I like to write jokes and then get instant. It's a fucking straight ego play. It's I like to write a joke and hear a crowd laugh at it. This is why I don't take other people's jokes. It's why I'm like, I try to be a pretty harsh critic of my own jokes because I want to be proud of the shit I'm making. And if people like it or don't like it, I don't want to change based on that. And that includes if comics that even comics I respect, I think Nate Bargatze is one of the greats. I think he's going to go down. I think he will go down as one of the greatest comics of all time. But like, I just like the we don't have fucking best week ever and guy court and guy code. That stuff doesn't exist anymore. It also certainly doesn't exist for people who live outside of the New York and LA area, which is another thing that dude advocates for. It's happening on the internet. It's all happening on the internet. The stand-up clips are like, also like like the YouTube special thing people shit on, which I don't think he does because he's actually, I think, pretty awesome. Some of the stuff he specifically is doing, which is producing other comedian specials and then putting them out on his YouTube. And I'm sure, I have no doubt that he's, the money situation is generous. But like the very obvious thing is that if he puts them out on his YouTube, they will get more views than if they were to go on those comics' personal YouTubes, and that should translate into those guys making the money back on the road, that's the model that everything, all live entertainment has gone to, right? Is like, you stream music for free, and the hope is that you'll go see fucking Imagine Dragons in concert. I say as a traumatized Imagine Dragons concert survivor. Oh man, you know what we're racing against is I gotta take a shit. And so it's like a matter of, how much longer do I go versus when do I feel too much discomfort? I got this, it's a lav system mic, so this could all sound terrible, and if you hear it, it might be begrudgingly, because it might all sound terrible. But yeah, that's like the path, the like quote-unquote traditional path just like simply does not exist for comics today. It's so much more democratized, and that's great, but what I really hate is when someone who has no stakes in it, who already is a millionaire, who basically is like, it's like, well, if more comics get famous, now maybe he only makes $12 million a year instead of $20 million a year. That shit bugs me. It's not him, I just heard him, even, I guess, heard about him saying that most recently, by the way. Again, I think he's one of the greats, and I've also heard a lot of comics say this, a lot of comics with established careers. And, like, you know who doesn't like innovation? Who doesn't like, new methods of distribution and people getting shit to the, because that's all I want right now. Like, I recognize that I went to Montana this weekend, and made $1,000. That's not bad. That's a pretty decent payday for me. But what I know is $1,000 is just basically funding the trip. Okay, it's not the if I'm gonna do comedy for a living, it's more like being a professional athlete in that there's going to be a limited window where people find my comedy relevant. And in that period of time, I don't think I can just make like fucking 60 grand a year through those periods if it ever happens. If it ever happens, that's also the other thing, is if it ever happens. And the only way it'll happen, by the way, is if you and about 100,000 of your friends follow me on social media at the Casey McClain everywhere. But also another thing that I find kind of annoying is there's no acknowledgement that the I think we should have, I feel like I've gone over this before, but I think that the like push for diversity is very good, but I think it's also fine to acknowledge that I want my own, I'm most invested in my own career. I would not give up the opportunity to have a lucrative comedy career just to, and then after, you know, let me be the last one in the door. I'm like everybody else, by the way, I'm just being honest. Like, I think most people feel that way. There's very few people I know who would actually give up their own comedy career in the name of diversity. Maybe I should bleep out how much money I made in Montana. And that's like less, like I had a flight out there and obviously like food and stuff. They put me in a hotel for one of the nights and then we did a lot of traveling and I slept in my buddy's condo for the other nights, which by the way, I'm grateful for. I am grateful for. And I will say this, I know that he, on my shows this weekend, he lost money. I don't know how much. I don't know what if you listen to the Poor Sports podcast, I went into some detail about the nearby comedy competition I was facing. Not an actual comedy competition, but other comedians in the area competing with me for ticket sales. Competing with me and dominating me in ticket sales, by the way. To call it a competition is pretty generous to me. But yeah, this is like, I guess this is, it's the same gatekeeper bullshit that the way that I would say it if I was being the most plain is like, comedy fans want what comedy fans want, and if you don't let them, if you choose to not let them get it on your platform, and that, by the way, like, for Nate Bargatze, there was a time when Netflix was a risky play, and now they're just the Comedy Central of their time is kind of my view of it, where they're risk averse because they're an enormous corporation with a huge infrastructure as opposed to a startup company who needs to take some big swings to take a shot at becoming a multi-billion dollar corporation. And so here we are. Whatever the next thing is, I'm going to put out some crowd work clips. I don't give a shit. Like, also, that happens at a show. It's like, what's the experience like coming to a Casey McClain show? Well, I'm not going to do a thing. There's also a thing going on that I will say I find a little bit annoying where, like, comics go, okay, this is the crowd work portion of the show. I'm going to do a crowd work portion. Please yell out your thoughts and I'll do a hacky pre-written joke that feels spontaneous. I don't love that either. I've done, though, like, I did a show with Andrew Rivers where we did, a Q&A after, and it's, like, two comics riffing on stage, which I will say is, in my opinion, a little different. Or maybe Andrew will never book me to open for him again. I also still have not seen the footage. Maybe I gotta get that footage. I think there was some funny stuff in there. I think I might have told the story already, but I also, that day I was, we were like talking to the crowd and it's, you know, bright lights and the crowd isn't lit very well. And there was a man who had been vocal during the show, during my set, during Andrew's set. And sitting next to him was a trans woman with a very deep voice. And when we were doing the Q&A portion, I kept thinking it was this man who was, I said that he looked like, what's that guy's name from third base? MC Search. And I don't think that's true, but in spirit, I think it was true. Like, he looked like a guy who was, like if you were going to make a generic aging white rapper in a video game, this was the dude. Anyway, yeah, I kept looking over. This trans woman was talking. I didn't recognize that it was the trans woman talking because she was in the dark and this dude was in the light. This guy had been talking the whole time. And so I kept going, "Sir," while there was a trans woman there, this was in Bellingham, Washington, which is a place where misgendering is pretty, pretty frowned upon. And I frown on it too, by the way. I'm into respecting people's preferred pronouns. That's my shit. I think it's, even whatever you believe about it, it's like the polite, decent thing to do. And, yeah, I think you're, whatever. Who gives a shit? Why am I talking about that? I do think as a comedy viewer, like, there's a thing where you're... One, I kind of view it like the way that I view baseball, the stuff they're doing with baseball, which is like, I'm going to watch baseball the same amount no matter what they do. I'm a nerd. I'm an addict. Something just fell, like, right next to my head in this, and I can't figure out what it was. There's nothing they can do to me to make me not watch. Baseball is not trying to market to me. And that's the thing I think people kind of lose sight of is they're trying to get new people to watch without alienating the old people. And I'm not, like, I'm inalienable, basically. And, like, hardcore comedy fans, maybe they don't love the crowd work stuff. Maybe they can see that the some of the crowd work stuff... Kind of like the roast stuff a couple years ago. It was like everything was a roast. We had to have a roast battle in every city. And I think it still goes on to some degree. But I think we've moved away from that. Because it's like there's a limited range of jokes you can say about someone that's not famous. And it's like, you know, there's comics that are like, well, I do roasts and I don't want you to do any fat jokes. Because I'm fat and it hurts my feelings. And it's like, one... If your feelings are easily hurt, you shouldn't do a roast show. But also, like, nobody knows who you are. So, anyway, so, like, we don't know, you know. So the thing is, like, I should say something more personal and painful. Comics are dumb. The good ones and the bad ones, equally stupid. And I'm not taking myself out of that category. I'm sure I'm a hypocritical piece of shit also. I don't really have a through line to finish on. I had fun in Montana. I talked about it a lot on the Poor Sports podcast. So I'm headlining the new Tacoma Comedy Club on June 25th. I will be very likely headlining a show at... So either... I don't know if it's ready to announce. It's a place that will very likely be home to live Poor Sports podcasts and stand-up shows that I'm in talks with. I think we're pretty much finalized on it. I don't think there's any, like, real negotiation left to do except for just to finalize the dates. And so when that's figured out, I'll say it on here. I'll say it on the Poor Sports podcast. Also, the Road Hacks web series, we haven't posted anything for a while, but we got some new content coming up there, so go check that out. And I'm going to start doing live streams on my YouTube. This one obviously isn't going to be a live stream, but I'm going to start doing them significantly more often, and I would love it if you watched them and chatted and commented and all that stuff. It's, like, pretty fun to have the crowd interaction, fun to get a buddy on there to talk some shit with us, and so please go do that. And as always, thank you for listening to this podcast. I've definitely devoted a lot more energy to some other projects recently, but if you want raw and uncut Casey McClain, this is where you can get it. And then eventually, when I restart a Patreon or Substack or something like that, I will, you know, those ones were a little bit... When I was doing them weekly on Substack, they were a little bit because then we're behind a paywall. We can get a little more wild over there. So we'll do that eventually. It's all kind of, my life is kind of in flux at the mercy of my wife, my daughter, and my soon-to-be daughter, who all unapologetically like to run me into the ground. Yeah, June 25th, I'll be all over. Check out my Instagram, DKCMcLean, if you want other. That's probably where I'll be most likely to post dates. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you later.